Welcome and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Top 10 Problem-Solving Scenarios, OmegaMon and Tivoli Enterprise Portal. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn about the top 10 use cases to efficiently monitor and identify root causes of your ZOS, CICS, IMS, and DB2 performance issues. The speaker for today's presentation is Ed Woods, Consulting IT Specialist, IBM Software Group. At this time, I'd like to turn things over to Mr. Woods. Please go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Ed Woods with IBM Corporation, and first of all, I want to thank everyone for taking the time to attend this webcast today. I trust you'll find this to be an interesting discussion. What I've done here is I've pulled together quite a few scenarios to show how you can take advantage of the Tivoli Enterprise Portal to do common problem-solving type of scenarios. So the title is Top 10 Problem-Solving Scenarios Using IBM OmegaMon and the Tivoli Enterprise Portal. So our focus today is going to be on using the Tivoli Enterprise Portal, also known as the TEP, to solve common kind of challenges you would look at in your environment. And when I put this thing together, I kind of asked myself a question. If I'm looking at a given system or subsystem or component, typically what's the first thing I would want to look at to analyze an issue in that given subsystem or component? And then I also pulled some of my colleagues as well for some of their suggestions as well. So I use this then as input to just kind of drive through what I think are the most typical common kind of scenarios to show how you can use the Tivoli portal to be able to kind of isolate issues, drill down, do diagnostic analysis to isolate things. But then also the last couple scenarios are more, not necessarily technically specific, but are more kind of general scenarios and how you can use the Tivoli portal to integrate and to do things like looking at dashboard capabilities to really leverage the Tivoli Enterprise portal to get the most bang for the buck out of the tool. So let's go to the next slide that says questions. So these are common questions you may ask. You know, are you getting the most out of your investment in System Z? Are you able to recognize and resolve issues quickly and efficiently? Are you able to get the most in terms of performance and availability out of your critical applications? And, of course, a lot of what we'll be talking about here, what are the most common issues you'll find when you're looking at OmegaMon and how you can use OmegaMon to address these kind of issues? These are the common kind of questions that everyone's looking at regardless of whatever your core business is. If you're talking System Z, you, of course, want to be sure you're getting the most out of that platform, out of your investment in the hardware and the software to get the best in terms of performance and availability. So let's go to the next slide that says common resources to consider. Well, there's quite a few resources that you can put in the list. This is just a fairly kind of a brief overview of typical things you would commonly look at with any kind of a monitoring solution, OmegaMon, whatever. And so this could include things from the operating system perspective, your LPARs, your CPU memory address spaces. From a transactions perspective, so that could be your transaction managers, your IMSs, your CICSs, your subsystems, the regions that make up those things, the tasks and transactions and programs that make up the workload that flows through these transaction managers. If you're talking MQ series, then we'd be talking messages as well. The queues, the files, buffers, pools, logging, all of these components are common in some form or another to all these things, whether it's IMS, KICS, MQ, whatever. Then from a database perspective, of course, then as well, you still have your subsystem considerations, as well as files or database objects in the forms of tables, table spaces. Files could be, take the form of KICS, VSAM, it could take the form as well of IMS DLI databases. You have your various calls, be it SQL or DLI, your threads, your connections, your various pools, logging, locking, et cetera, all come into play here as well. And then finally, the network. Looking at things from the perspective of the network stack, the address space, your TCP/IP task running on ZOLs, the applications that connect through TCP/IP to ZOS, as well as your SNA VTAM task, as well as the various connections, interfaces, et cetera. So just even from this brief list, you can see there's a lot of potential resources that you may potentially need to consider or take a look at in your environment. And these are common type of resources that would really come into play in any kind of an environment where you're using an OmegaMon tool and to monitor and manage. So let's go to the first scenario, scenario number one. So I've gone to the slide that says scenario number one, ZOS operating system, analyzing ZOS high CPU usage issues in real-time mode. So what's one of the first things you typically look at You know, somebody walks up to you and says, oh, the system's running slow. What's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to go to some type of assist system CPU display, see what's happening with the CPU. How busy is the system? Is the system saturated? Are we running at a high percentage of utilization, or is there something else going on in the system? Now, when we're talking about system CPU utilization, there's two perspectives. And so what I've done here is I've shown two different workspaces that you would commonly use in the Tivoli portal. Now, these are product-provided OmegaMon ZOS workspaces. The one on the upper side shows system CPU utilization, how busy is the overall system, and as well as the various LPARs that make up this particular system. But the lower portion of the slide shows the product-provided address workspace, which would show the address spaces on the system and then shows graphically as well as a tabular fashion down towards the bottom. So this is what you get out of the box in terms of being able to view both from the system perspective as well as from the address space perspective what's happening from a resource utilization perspective with the ZOS system. Let's go to the next slide that says scenario number one, analyzing ZOS high CPU, a custom workspace. Now what I like to do oftentimes is I'll take the product provided workspaces perhaps as a starting point, and then maybe I'll tweak them and optimize them to my preference or optimize them to the requirements of the customer or the application that I'm working with. Now in this case, what I've done here is I've kind of taken one of the product provided workspaces as a starting point. Now I usually leave the product provided workspaces alone, use those as maybe a template, and then I'll make a custom one and save it so that I can have it for later reference. And when I customize this workspace, it will be stored in the Tivoli portal server so that I can share it with other users. So in this case, what have we done here? Well, if you look at this, I've kind of taken the two portions of the equation that I was talking about on the prior slide. So in the top portion, we have information about system CPU utilization. So we see in the center there a system CPU utilization set of information showing average CPU percent, et cetera. And then to the right of that, what we see is a system CPU plot chart. And this is going to plot out over time, and it's going to show average CPU, assist processor CPU, ZIP CPU, et cetera, and just plot these over a period of several minutes so that you can kind of see the peaks and valleys, spikes and rises and falls of the CPU utilization over near term. Now, in addition, what I've done in the bottom portion is I've also then pulled in the address space CPU usage so that basically what I can do here is I can say, okay, I can, instead of having to go to one screen to see the system and another screen to see the address spaces, let's just have it all in one place. So I only need to go to one screen to see the first thing that I'm going to want to see, which is like, hey, the system's running slow. Let's log on first of all and see what's busy, who's using the cycles, and how busy is it. So another thing that I've done, and on the bottom portion of this display, is I have a little note there that says, consider a custom query. And the reason I put that note in is because basically what I've done is I have created a custom query to pull this display together, and I'll show you on the next slide how that works in just a second. But basically, the idea is you might have hundreds of address-based tasks on a given LPAR, of which a majority of those aren't really doing much of anything. So the idea is, rather than have to page through all the stuff that isn't doing anything, how about if we just have a query that just says, only show me the tasks that are above a certain percentile of usage, and then tune the rest out, so that I'm only really looking at the stuff that's actively chewing up resource on the system at that given moment. Now I'll use a query to do that and then feed that into the workspace, because that will basically allow the workspace to render more quickly versus having to pass perhaps hundreds of rows of data up to the portal server just to have it then in turn sort through that. So now, let's go to the next slide and we'll talk a little bit about this query mechanism I was just discussing. So the slide I'm on now says, take advantage of custom queries to optimize the display of information. When you look at a Tivoli Enterprise portal display and all the various tiles and components and pieces and parts that make it up, in many cases, the data that shows up on those workspaces is driven by this mechanism called a query. Each of the various workspaces that are provided out of the box have a set of product-provided queries as well that drive the information, and that query then goes out to the monitoring infrastructure and says, this is the information we need. We need address space data, DASD data, paging data, whatever the workspace is you might be looking at. Now, anytime I'm going to do something to customize, again, just like I say, I will take maybe a product-provided workspace as a starting point and then tweak it and alter it and do a save as to save it to a name of my own. I'll do the same thing oftentimes with a query. So in other words, if I'm going to make a change to the query, what I will do is I will make a copy of that query. You can do a right-click and say create another, and then I will then make my changes to that particular query in question. So what I've done in this case is I've said, okay, rather than show me all the address spaces, what I've done is I've created an EWAS overview query and just said, give me only the ones they're actually using CPU, and I've kind of highlighted in red where I've customized the CPU percent column in there. So to get into this query mechanism, I would do a right-click properties from the table, and then I would click on the query tab, which I show kind of in the middle of the example here, and then I would get the query pop-up, and from there I can select the query that I want or create another copy of a query or do whatever kind of mechanism I need to do to get done what I need to get done. So the query then in turn drives the filtering without having to send all that data up to the portal. So let's go to the next slide that says identify looping tasks. Another neat thing about the portal, and this is something that was added in a Megamon XE for ZOS V420, was this notion of a looping task indicator. Basically what this shows is if you have an address space that's out there consuming a lot of cycles but doesn't seem to be really doing much in the way of any actual work, not really doing much in the way of I.O. or anything else. So this could be just something that's in a tight loop. And so this loop index indicator gives you an indication that you might have something that is a candidate for something that is in a CPU, tight CPU loop. So in addition to being able to view this on the portal display that we see here, you can also use this as input to a situation with a take action. That take action could be a notification. You could actually go ahead and even kill the task if you wanted to be so bold as to do that. So the identify looping task is a nice little mechanism that was added in Megamon XE for ZOS V420. So scenario one, what's happening on the system? Where are we using CPU? How busy is the system? Are there any high usage tasks? Maybe optimize the display to be able to see more easily what tasks are using cycles and how busy is the system, pull it together on a single screen, and then possibly even take advantage of this looping task mechanism. So let's go to scenario number two, analyze CPU usage. So I've gone to the slide that says analyzing CPU usage, scenario number two. But now what we're going to do is take advantage of the Tivoli Data Warehouse to do our analysis. So the prior set of screens, we were focused on the real-time views, looking at the tasks, the system, et cetera, from a real-time perspective within the Tivoli portal. But in addition, you can also do this work as well using the Tivoli Data Warehouse history functions. So there's history that is gathered potentially at several different points within the Megamon ZOS collector. So this slide shows history collection. So we have in the center, or actually more to the left portion, we show our 3270 interface. I have a box that says a Megamon collector, and it shows real-time and historical, and then I have history going off to the left. That history is commonly what we refer to as the epilogue history, or if we were talking maybe not ZOS, but maybe in a different example, say CICS, that could be task history, or DB2, that could be near-term history. Meanwhile, as well, if we look down towards the bottom of where we have ZOS, we also see the Megamon XE TEMA, or agent. So the TEMA, or agent task, its job is to basically pull information and then in turn show it real-time or also gather history as well. Now, the history that's gathered by the TEMA, the XE agent, is different in that it's typically snapshot data. It's going to snap those rows of information on a periodic basis depending upon what your requirements are. And so that history then can in turn be stored at the level of the TEMA, or can also be sent up to the Tivoli Enterprise Managing Server, or the TEMS, which we see over on the right-hand side. From the TEMS, then, in turn, it can be sent to this thing called the Tivoli Data Warehouse. And you would put it in the Tivoli Data Warehouse for long-term storage and usage. Now, the Tivoli Data Warehouse is going to be a set of relational tables. You could put it on DB2, you could put it on Oracle, you could put it on DB2 on Linux, Unix, Windows. You can put it on DB2 on ZOS. Where you house the data is purely up to you and whatever your requirements are, how much data you intend to keep, how long you intend to keep it, et cetera, how frequently you snapshot the data. One thing I'll point out is when you create the Tivoli Data Warehouse, you're typically going to have a couple different categories, if you will, of tables. So underneath where it says Tivoli Data Warehouse, on the left I show TDW detail tables. That's your detail information. So for each snapshot, you get some detail, snap it, store it, snap it, store it. But then in addition, you have summary tables. You have different levels of summary tables, your hourly, daily, quarterly, monthly, yearly, whatever. And so data will go from one place to another and will be summarized in the tables. Now, how it gets summarized, how it gets retained, really depends upon what you request when you set up the TDW for a given monitoring agent. Okay, so let's go to the next slide that says Scenario 2, Analyzing CPU Usage Historical. So what we're going to do now is take advantage of the Tivoli Data Warehouse to be able to trend and analyze resource usage over time, in this case CPU usage. So what we're looking at here is basically a couple scenarios. So the top chart shows the peaks and valleys of CPU usage over a 24-hour period combined for an entire plex, if you will. And then on the bottom portion, you have a breakout for LPAR1 on the left and LPAR2 on the right with the same kind of a 24-hour plot. The idea is basically to just get a better handle using the system CPU information stored in the Tivoli Enterprise Portal, in the Tivoli Data Warehouse to be more precise, and then plot that over a period of time. So this gives you a good idea of the peaks and valleys of the utilization and the usage. Now I'll show some other examples of taking advantage of TDW as well in some later scenarios. But I think this is a nice direct, straightforward example of how you can take advantage of the Tivoli Data Warehouse to be able to see what's happening over time. So in Scenario 1, we were looking at real time. Here's Scenario 2, we're looking at similar kind of concept, system CPU utilization, but now we're looking at it historically. So let's go to the next slide that says Scenario number 3, Isolating DB2 Performance Bottlenecks, Thread Analysis. So we've talked about the system, we've talked about CPU, real time, and history. So now if we move on to, say, DB2, for example, if somebody comes up to me and says, you know, we're having some type of an issue with DB2, what's the first thing you're typically going to look at? That's the question often asked. What's the first thing I'm going to look at? If it's DB2, I'm going to go look at the threads. I want to look at the threads that are running on the system, see how busy these threads are, where they're spending their time, are they doing a lot of GET pages, what typical type of activity are these threads doing. So here's an example of the thread activity display from the Tivoli Enterprise Portal. This is the product provided workspace. And so the columns that I oftentimes will focus on will be the ones that I kind of highlighted with the arrows in the middle. They'll show the in DB2 time, wait times, GET pages. So the in DB2 time, that is where we're focusing on, the amount of time that the thread is actually in DB2 doing actual work. You know, if you focus on elapsed times, a lot of times elapsed time can fool you, because with thread reuse and things like that, you might have threads that are sitting around for a long time, but they're not doing much productive work. But if they're in DB2 a high percentage of the time, then they're actually in there doing something. But oftentimes, what's one of the first things I might look at? Well, I might click on that column that says GET page, where I have highlighted with an arrow. Click on the GET page, because odds are, more often than not, the high GET page thread is the one that's doing the most activity. The bigger the SQL calls, the more SQL calls being executed, the more data that's being scanned by those SQL calls, the more GET pages that have to be done. And the more GET pages you're doing, more often than not, the greater the potential for I/O, depending on, you know, the nature of your application and the nature of your data. So the product provided DB2 thread workspace provides an easy mechanism to be able to see the threads from an overview perspective. And then you notice you have, for example, these navigation push buttons at the top, where you can go from distributed threads to Kix threads to IMS threads to whatever. And this is a nice little navigation mechanism that you can get from point A to point B. If we go to the next slide that says DB2 thread analysis, creating a custom thread analysis workspace, I kind of do something similar in a way. This is a custom view here. This is not a product provided, but one I've built myself. And so by customizing this, I've done something kind of similar to the look and feel and effect you get from the push button mechanism on the product provided, but basically I just filter and build the data right here so I can see there's all my distributed threads, there's my batch, there's my CICS IMS, my high GET page threads, all my threads, whatever. Put it all on one screen, and then I can click on the various boxes to explode it up quickly and easily. So this is just another take on doing this. Really, this is an example of being able to leverage the portal to do something in terms of how you want to look at the data. To me, that's one of the most useful aspects of the Tivoli portal, is that it provides you with a lot of flexibility to be able to take the data and customize it to your particular requirements. What I commonly find is different people like to look at things in different ways. Some people might want to look at things in a tabular format and sort through data. Other people like to use graphics. Some people want to focus on real time. Others might want to look at history. The nice thing about the portal is however you want to do the analysis, you have the data and the flexibility to go out and do it. So if we go to the next slide that says creating a custom threat analysis workspace continued. So this is an example of how just by using the filter mechanisms that are built into the Tivoli Enterprise portal, you can filter the various components. So if you remember what we had on the prior slide where I had a component that just showed distributed, a piece that just showed batch, a piece that just showed CICS. So literally what I did was I would just take that piece, I would do a right click and say properties, and then on the filter tab, I would then in turn go in and say, like for the distributed, I would just put in the plan name. I would just say DISSERV. So I just want to see all the DISSERV threads. And that way then I can quickly and easily sort through that information and have a display that just shows the DISSERV threads in question and tunes out the other things. In addition, if I wanted to do some additional filtration, I could put information in some of the other columns in here as well and really target it towards specific things I want to look at. Now, once I've customized this display, I can do a right click and save as, and this will save the workspace in the Tivoli portal server so that I have it for later use, or I can share it as well with my colleagues. So now let's go to the next slide that says scenario number 4, isolating CICS performance issues, task analysis. So just like with DB2, where when someone says, you know, hey, we have an issue with DB2, what's one of the first things I'm going to look at? Threats. Similar kind of situation when we're talking CICS. We have some type of a CICS issue. What's one of the first things you're going to look at? You're going to want to look at what tasks are in the system. So you can go to the task or the transaction analysis workspace, which is the product-provided workspace that comes with a Megamon XE for CICS. And inside transaction analysis, you can then in turn go in and you can see the tasks that are in the system. And just like with the DB2, you can click on any of the column headers and you can sort. So you can sort by CPU time, elapsed time status. If there's a wait, you can click on the wait type column and then in turn see, well, what tasks are in the system, what's using CPU, what seems to be busy, and then focus on those and then in turn drill in for additional detail. So you notice on the left portion of this screenshot, I had done a right click and then you get the pop-up where you can see we can look at things like unit of work, online data viewing, which is the task history, get more transaction details, storage info, a lot of information you can get from this particular transaction view. So anytime I want to drill in and look at what's happening with the CICS region, probably one of the first things I'll do is I'll go to the task analysis, sort the data, take a look at what's going on, and then do a drill in from there, common methodology. Now, what I'll typically do with this, and I built this display and I found this to be quite handy. So what we'll do is we'll go to the next slide that says isolating CICS performance issues. Is I'll take that transaction analysis workspace and I'll add one little thing to it. And so what I did was I added another little tile or piece of data to this workspace. Other than that, I like the workspace as it is. What I did was I added the region overview. And by adding the region overview, I can then see kind of a region summary that shows what's happening with the region. And I like to oftentimes look at the region overview as well, because that will show me the CPU utilization, the I/O rates, basically give me an indication of the transaction rates, basically give me an indication of how busy this particular region is. But if you look closely at this particular workspace, what I've done as well is I've added not just the region information just for this particular region. I actually pull it in for multiple regions. Now, the reason I did that was this. I figure I can also then in turn use this as a shortcut to navigate. A lot of times, especially with the agents like a Megamon CICS, if you expand up the navigation tree, which is the thing on the left, you have a lot of scrolling up and down to do. So if I want to go from one region to another very quickly to see what's going on in region 1, what's going on in region 2, what's going on in region 3, rather than have to scroll the tree up and down, I thought, well, it might be nice to be able to have a mechanism like this where I can just have something, set up a link, have all the regions there listed out, and then just click and go from the task view of one to the other to the other. So this is a customized workspace, again, that basically takes something that was provided by the product as a starting point, but I just kind of tweaked it to my own personal preference. So let's go to the next slide that says scenario number 5, isolate IMS bottlenecks, analyze IMS queues and processing. Now what we're looking at in this particular slide is an example of one of the product-provided workspaces for Megamon XE for IMS. So just like with ZOS, I'll look at CPU, with DB2, I'll look at threads, with KIX, I'll look at tasks. When I'm looking at an IMS system and somebody's saying to me, you know, IMS is having a challenge, what do you think is going on? The thing I typically like to look at is, well, there's a couple different views I'll take, but one I like to get a handle on is, what is the general flow through the system? How quickly are we enqueuing and dequeuing work? How busy in terms of CPU usage? And what is the transaction rate? Are we queuing up transactions or transactions flowing through the system? I oftentimes draw the analogy that IMS is like a garden hose, and that if somebody stomps on the garden hose, the water will not flow through the hose as quickly and the water will back up. IMS tends to behave in a similar kind of fashion. So if I feel like I'm not getting the work through the system, I'm getting poor response time, I'm not getting the kind of throughput that I want, well then typically what I'll do is I will look at IMS from the perspective of how is the work flowing through. Now if we go to the next slide that says IMS Historical Performance Analysis Custom Workspace, what we're looking at here is a workspace that is I kind of customized to my own personal use. So now, if we remember our discussion from before about the Tivoli data warehouse and how you can take some warehouse data and kind of integrate it in, this is in essence what I've done here is now I've used this Tivoli data warehouse mechanism and I've built a workspace that will take Tivoli data warehouse data from several sources. We're pulling response time data, processing data, NQ, bottleneck, transaction status data, and I've stored it in the warehouse and then trended it out and plotted it on these various pieces of the display over time. The idea then is I can get a better understanding of what may be happening when I have bottlenecks and events on the system. So I have a graph. So if you look at the graph in the bottom left that says response time, you'll see where response time has started to ratchet up. And then if you continue on to the right where it says trend processing rate, not coincidentally, you might see that the processing rate has slowed down, so something is kind of bottlenecked in the system. If we look in the upper right portion of the screen, you'll see suddenly, if you look closely at the plot chart, that the bottleneck has started to ratchet up. So all of a sudden we have some scheduling weights and some other weights on the system. So something's bottlenecked, response time's elongated, processing rates have slowed down as a result. This is a good example of how you can kind of get a feel for the flow of the workload through the IMS system using this. Now, this is a custom view, but it's something that's, I think, fairly easy to do and can be quite powerful to understand what's happening with your IMS systems. Let's go to the next slide that says, the TEP provides powerful chart functions and statistical analysis features. The TEP, otherwise known as the Tivoli Enterprise Portal, has a lot of graphic capabilities that can be quite useful. And if you have the latest and greatest version, which is the ITM 622 release of the Tivoli portal, then you get some arithmetic functions and do things like what I'm doing here, which is basically what we're looking at is we're taking some average and we're applying it to the chart that we were looking at before. So in other words, I now get a line that goes across that shows what's the average response time and lays it against the plot chart for response time data. So what I did was I clicked on the icon that says give me the statistical option, then there's the pop-up that lets me set my statistical baseline. You can see we can look at min, max, percentile, average. I just selected average and used that as a working point. And then if you go to the next slide, you'll see probably a little bit easier to see example of what we're talking about here. So here we're looking at response time. And we see the plot chart, which is the area chart in purple. So we see that for a period of time, response time was below the average, then suddenly spiked up for a period of time to above average, and then slowly came back down to where it just hangs right around the average trend line. So this is a way to see when you're looking at the graphic, or if you're actually if you're looking at any kind of a monitor, a lot of times, you know, someone will be looking at a number and go, well, is this a good number or is this a bad number? And, of course, the answer is always, well, it depends. It depends on the nature of your workload, the nature of your system. Different systems have different thresholds of pain, if you will, for lack of a better way to put it. By being able to take advantage of the Tivoli Data Warehouse and pull that data into the TEP, you then have the ability to be able to do things like this to see, well, if response time is at a certain level, is that above or below what is typically common or typically the average, and then integrate that easily into your display. So let's go to the next slide that says scenario number 6, WebSphere MQ. So in this particular example, what we're going to talk about here is MQ series and isolating MQ performance issues. And in a lot of ways, you know, I was just talking about managing an IMS system and looking at the IMS system from the perspective of understanding the flow through the workload. Is it queuing? Is it processing? Are the queues backing up? Similar kind of deal as well if we're talking MQ series. MQ, as the name implies, is built upon the notion of messages and queues and passing these messages from one point to another. So, again, same question as what I was asked before. If I'm having an issue with MQ, what's the first thing or two I'm going to look at? Well, I'm either going to look at the queues and look at the queue statistics, or I'm going to look at the channels and see, is the channel performing well? Is the channel status active and things of that nature? So here we're looking at queue statistics. And in the queue statistics, and this is one of the product-provided workspaces again, what we're looking at here is queue statistics, and we can click on the column that says current depth, so we can click and see that we have some queues that have quite a few messages in the queue. You can also look at columns that will show message put, message read rates, and there's a lot of information that gives you an indication of just how backed up is the queue and how busy is the queue in terms of traffic going in and traffic going out. So similar in terms of a thought paradigm to what we're discussing before with IMS. I tend to draw that analogy. So let's go to the next slide that says use situations to alert on MQ queue depth. So in this particular example, what we're looking at here is how we can take advantage of the situation mechanisms that come as part of the Tivoli Enterprise portal to set alerts. So here what we've done is I've just gone out and created a basic situation that will say if queue depth is greater than a certain level, generate an alert. And that alert will then in turn show up on the Tivoli portal in the form of a red icon that shows up on the navigation tree. You can position the cursor over that and get the flyover and then click and drill in on that to get more detail. But in addition, there's other things that you can do with these situations as well. So let's go to the next slide that says a situation to monitor MQ queue depth. So here I show how you launch into the situation editor. We do a right click on queue statistics. We get a pop-up. We then in turn select situations. And then we see a list of the relevant situations for that point in the navigation tree, of which the one is the one I created myself, the EWQ depth high. Now, in this particular example, in addition to just setting a threshold, I also wanted to show an example of how you can take advantage of Boolean logic using the situation editor. So you might have different levels of allowable queue depth for different queues. So here I show that we can have one queue depth level for a queue manager called WSQM. You can have a different level for WSQA. But at the same time, if the current depth is above a certain level and I set it at 1,000, I'll also pull in some logic that says if I'm putting in messages beyond a certain rate and my queue depth is beyond a certain level, well, that means that regardless of what queue it is, I might be backing things up or loading things up quicker than I want. I might need to look at that. So this Boolean logic is a nice mechanism that you can take advantage of, because what it allows you to do is, rather than create a lot of itty-bitty situations that may be redundant and you have to do a lot more work to deploy a lot of small situations, maybe cut down the number of situations you require by taking advantage of Boolean logic and let one situation do the work of multiple alerts. And so this is a simple way to do that, just using the Boolean logic mechanism that comes with the situation editor. Now, in addition, on the top portion of this situation pop-up in the situation editor, I highlight the other tabs that are driven by the situation editor. So we see the distribution tab. That controls where did the situation run. Expert advice, that lets you put in advice that says, so if someone sees the alert fire, what should you do, who should you call, et cetera. And then to the right of that is the action tab. In the action tab, you can put a command in there that says, basically, you would, in the case of this, if, since it's running on ZOS, commonly would do something like issue a ZOS console command. And then to the right of that, you see something that says EIF. The EIF is basically an event interface. And what you would do is if you would send something through the EIF interface, you would send, for example, this alert forward onto, commonly, to NetCool Omnibus or the tech or whatever. So let's go to the next slide. That says scenario 7, network performance and availability, understanding the impact of the network on ZOS. This is something that I find to be somewhat underutilized with some of my customers. I have a lot of customers that have a Megamon XE for ZOS, CICS, DB2, IMS. But where I'm encouraging them to take a look as well is consider including a Megamon for mainframe networks into the mix. A Megamon XE for mainframe networks provides a lot of core information about what's happening in the network stacks on ZOS. It monitors both SNA as well as TCP/IP. It will monitor at the level of, say, for example, the IP address space. It'll monitor the applications that are talking to TCP/IP or SNA. It'll give you connection information, throughput information, response time, round-trip time type information, etc. What it does then is it basically pushes out the monitoring a bit so that not only are you monitoring just the host, but you're also monitoring the network traffic to from the host and get a better understanding of what is oftentimes the core question. And so, again, what I was referring to as a common theme in a lot of these examples is what's the first thing, you know, first question you're typically going to be asked? Well, in a lot of cases in many shops, the question that I'm asked is it a network problem? Is it a ZOS or a host application problem? So to be able to answer that, you need to be able to get information from both sources, network as well as host. So what I've done in this particular example is I've put together DB2 thread information, for example, with DB2 network information. So what I've done is I've gone out and requested information from a Megamon mainframe networks and said, give me information from the DSNA disk, which is the DDF task, if you will, and show me connection and response time and variance information for that. Similar kind of information to the right of that, where I'm saying show me CICS response time and also show me CICS network traffic to and from the various CICS regions. Same deal as well if we go down to the lower left side, IMS response time, IMS network response time coming from mainframe networks. And then also I've included some alerts and actions and some other things. And in the middle, I also put an alert graphic view that if there's a situation that fires, those icons will change shape and color, and you can click on those to do a drill down. By building a display like this, you then have the ability to integrate that network data with the host data and get a better understanding of is the problem host, is the problem network. So now let's go to the next slide that says exploit queries to optimize the display. So here's another example of how I would build a display like this. So just like I took advantage of queries and filtering options on some of the prior examples, same kind of deal here as well. When you're looking at things like connection information from the TCP/IP stack as monitored by XE for mainframe networks, you could have a lot of connections. So rather than filter that at the level of the portal screen itself, it's probably better if you build a query. So you would just select a query, do create another, kind of like what I showed before, and then filter. So here we're filtering it for DSNA dist, which is what I show in the lower right portion of this display, and then use this query to drive the DB2 thread portion or the network portion of the DB2 distributed thread display. So similar kind of idea to what we were looking at prior. So let's go to the next slide that says scenario number 8, storage, understanding I/O bottlenecks. So we've talked about CPU, we've talked about transactions, databases, network, history, real time. But ultimately, I think one of the truisms has been true as long as I've been in this business, and I've been in this business a while now, is that CPUs are fast, I/O is slow. And that's still the case. I/O's subsystems and the hardware and stuff is always getting faster, faster, bigger, and faster. No question about it, but still the CPUs continue to get faster as well. So CPUs are fast, I.O. is slow. Regardless of what type of subsystem or workload type we're talking about, whether it's DB2, IMS, CICS, MQ, WebSphere, whatever, there's always potential for I.O., and there's always potential for that I.O. to slow down the action. Now, one thing that a Megamon does a very good job of, and this is a Megamon across the board, is it provides I.O. information, and it provides I.O. information in several ways. And so I list out the various Megamons and just give some basic examples of where you can get that I.O. data. So Megamon XE for ZOS will show your I.O. by vol SEER, by task, paging, etc. Megamon DB2 has object analysis and will show the I.O. activity by vol SEER, by object. It'll show logging I.O. Megamon CICS, you have your VSAM I.O. stats, your LSR buffer pool information, task region delay information. Megamon IMS has like database I.O. rates, and then I.O. counts and rates to the logging, to the long short message queue, queue block, and other critical data sets. Even XE for mainframe networks, where you could have file transfer protocol, FTP, so Megamon mainframe networks can give you information on that. Megamon messaging has its own monitoring of queues, buffers, logging. So each of the various Megamons has some kind of a I.O. considerations that will come into play. But a Megamon XE for storage provides the most robust information in terms of what's going on in the system from an I.O. subsystem perspective. With a Megamon storage, you can look at things from a variety of perspectives, from the perspective of the LCU, the logical control unit, the vol SEER. Go down to the data set level, look at virtual tape, look at cache control units, including getting into the internal detail of those cache control units. Look at things from the SMS and HSM perspective. And then the last bullet point I'll mention here, user-defined I.O. and space groups, application I.O. and space groups. So in other words, what you can do is you can group things up in terms of user-defined groups, user-defined groups of related vol SEERs, user-defined groups of related systems, or also just monitor things from the perspective of an application and look at things, and once we've grouped this, to see both the I.O. activity as well as space utilization. So Megamon XE for storage provides a lot of capability and flexibility above and beyond what you get with the other Megamons. So let's go to the next slide that says Storage Understanding I.O. Bottlenecks. So what we're looking at here is a couple of the product-provided workspaces. And so I've clicked on Logical Control Unit on the upper portion of the screen. And then we click, we'll get a pop-up, and then in turn we can select our any one of a variety of drill downs, and then in turn go in and look at the vol SEER level, and then in turn go ahead and drill in to see underlying detail as well. So just like with the other displays that we've looked at, you can then in turn click and sort, and you can sort by I.O. rates like I.O.s per second, percent busy, whatever makes sense, and then in turn drill in and look for those I.O. hotspots, those potential bottlenecks. This is one way of looking at I.O., and it's good from a, perhaps a technical perspective, but I kind of prefer to do things from a slightly different perspective, and that I like to look at the application perspective. So let's go to the next slide that says Storage Understanding I.O. Bottlenecks from the Application Perspective. This is something that I think that a Megamon storage does very well, but is, you know, I find to be somewhat underutilized, which is the notion that you can set up a Megamon for storage to go out and say, I want to monitor a given set of applications. So if you look closely at the slide in the upper left portion, you'll see that some of the applications we've added in here are some DB2s, some CICSs. And so what we're saying is let's start taking a detailed look at what's happening on these application subsystems and then monitor the I.O. activity, the space utilization, whatever. But now we can see it not so much just as a set of unrelated hardware devices, but now we're looking at it from the perspective of the subsystem and the applications that could be running within those things. It gives it, I think, much more meaning than just looking at a discrete set of bits and bytes and hardware components. So once we see what we want to see from the application perspective, you can then in turn do a similar kind of drill down. Like you get a right click, you get the pop up, and then in turn drill down and get additional detail, and you can continue to drill in from there. So the application component is something I find to be a very nice feature within a Megamon for storage. Okay, so let's go to the next slide that says scenario number 9, situation alert notification versus highlighting. We talked a little bit about situations already. A situation, you can specify some logic and then set up an alert, and that alert will pop up on the Tivoli portal display. Like in this example here, I've created a situation that monitors MQ depth, and that situation alert will pop up here on the screen, and you can click on it to drill down. Now, what's the difference between situations versus highlighting? Aren't they kind of the same thing? Well, actually, you can draw a comparison, but highlighting is a little different in that, you know, a situation is an alert where you actually go out and coded something, build it, distribute it, send it out to the various agents, and it goes out and executes. Highlighting, we're really just kind of highlighting information on the screen just for observational purposes. So let's go to the next slide, and you'll see what I mean. So if we go to the next slide, that says using the threshold function for informational highlighting. So here what we've done is I've gone into the workspace and then done the right click and gone to properties. And in the middle, you can specify, if you click the threshold tab, you can specify different levels. So for example here, I focused on buffer pool hit ratios. And if the buffer pool hit percentages are at certain levels, I can highlight them as a critical, warning, informational, whatever makes sense. This is a good example of kind of what I was referring to. Informational highlighting, as I call it, just using the threshold mechanism or the threshold function, is a good way to make something visual so that you can kind of catch it on the screen. In other words, it might be nice to know that my buffer pool hit ratio is doing a little bit less than what I would like it to do, but is that necessarily something that I need to be paged about? Is that necessarily something I need to drive an alert on? If I could just highlight it on the screen so that it's there for me to see and then it'll catch my eye and I can go and look at it later on, that's probably good enough in many cases. But it's not necessary that I go through the whole alert processing mechanism to do that. The advantage of the highlighting is it's quick, it's easy, and I don't have to distribute anything. I just customize the screen and off I go from there. With situations, you have to go in the situation editor, create the situation, define the logic, distribute it, send it out, and then that situation is in essence a piece of code that's going out and executing and doing these checks. So highlighting is going to be quicker, easier, lower overhead than going out and doing a situation to drive an alert. Let's go to the next slide that says using situations to drive event notification. The other thing is that if I need a notification, in other words, I need to be paged, I need to have something happen as a result of this event, well, then you really do need a situation. And in the situation editor, you can then go and you can specify your logic, which is what I show on the upper left portion, and then click something like the EIF or the action tab. If I click the action tab, I can have it issue an action. If I click the EIF tab, that's the event integration facility, then that alert can be sent on to something such as Omnibus, and then Omnibus can gather up that event and then correlate it and do whatever from there. So if I need an action, if I need something to happen as a result of this information, then a situation is more appropriate. If I just need to see it just for informational purposes, then maybe the threshold mechanism works better. If we go to the next slide that says use the EIF interface to send events to Omnibus. So here's just an example of how this EIF interface flows. And I'll mention that it's bidirectional. So up top we see the TEP, the Tivoli Enterprise Portal, and then we also see the event viewer for Omnibus. And so from the Tivoli Omegamon environment, we can go through the EIF interface, and we use this thing called an EIF probe to send the data on the Omnibus. And so Omnibus has this probe mechanism that's looking for these events coming from Omegamon, and then in turn, Omnibus as well can flow acknowledgement information back to the Tivoli portal as well. So this truly is a bidirectional type of an interface. Let's go to the next slide that says situations and alerts versus threshold highlighting. So just to kind of summarize the points I was making before, not all information requires an alert. Some stuff may just need to be highlighted so you can see it, but I don't necessarily need to be paged about it at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's useful to know that I'm not getting optimal buffer pool hit ratios, but I don't want to be called at 2 o'clock in the morning about it. Just highlight it so I can see it. You want to use situation alerts for events or information that require some type of additional analysis or some type of an action, or it's something that requires some type of a corrective action. And you want that event or alert to actually have some kind of owner that's responsible for addressing the issue as well. So something that requires that something be done, some kind of an action or a follow-on, then you probably do want to create a situation. But if it's just something that's of diagnostic interest, something that's just informational in nature, then just consider a threshold instead and just highlight it on the display and be done with it, because you may not need to go through the whole mechanism and process of creating a situation and setting it out and distributing it and executing it, et cetera. So let's go to the next slide. This says scenario number 10, a dashboard to provide an integrated problem management paradigm. I'm big on dashboards. I think the dashboard works really well with the Tivoli Enterprise Portal in that you have great graphic capabilities. It's flexible. It's customizable. You can put a lot of information into a Tivoli Enterprise Portal workspace. Here's an example of just what I call just a graphic alert overview interface. So we're getting alerts from a variety of sources, Windows, Unix, ZOS, Sysplex, Kix, DB2 Connect, Network, you name it. We're getting it from a variety of sources. There's no underlying graphic map here. Basically, we're just showing the icon, and then if there's an alert that's detected, the icon that we see here will change shape and color, and then you can click on it to get detail. So one of the things I suggest is take advantage of the graphics and integration capabilities of the portal to be able to customize some kind of a dashboard view and put that dashboard view out there. Now, what kind of a view do you want? Well, you could have a technical view, operational view, an alert management view like this here, a subject matter SME view. You could do end-to-end business application views, management views. There's a variety of things you can do, whatever makes sense in your environment. Usually what I recommend that customers do is maybe start with a couple examples, put it out there so that people can see it, establish the paradigm, and then you can go out and optimize it more for your environment. So basically just do the baby steps approach. Start small and then work your way up from there. So let's go to the next slide that says integrated technical view using the TEP. So what I've done in this example is actually I've taken a lot of the information from the prior scenarios I talked about. Let's look at ZOS CPU. Let's look at DB2 threads, CICS tasks, network, DASD, whatever, and put it all in a single place. So kind of what I said before I built this is, you know, keeping in mind the question I was asking for each of the components, what's the first thing that I would look at? Well, I could put it on one single screen, which is what I did here. This is a nice capability of the TEP to be able to integrate information for a powerful technical view. Okay, so let's go to the next slide that says dashboard alternatives, the TEP versus TBSM. So the Tivoli Enterprise Portal, or the TEP, is, I think, a good starting point to be able to start working on this notion of a management dashboard or building a dashboard view. The Tivoli portal is powerful. You have flexible graphics. You can integrate a lot of information. You can sit down. You can customize some very slick dashboards using this. So I think the TEP is a good way to establish the concept of how you could build an integrated management dashboard and do some initial prototyping and get some things out the door. Now, if you're a large shop and you have a lot of different things you want to build, then there's a point where you might want to consider more than just using the TEP, and that's where you would want to look at something like what's called TBSM, the Tivoli Business Service Manager. TBSM basically takes the notion of the dashboard, kind of like what we were looking at before, and expands it and adds a lot of additional capability and is focused more on things like SLAs, does more in terms of event correlation with Omnibus, and it's a much more expandable and scalable thing. And then the other aspect is TBSM also integrates with auto-discovery technologies such as TATM, which is an application dependency discovery management capability that will go out and look at the interdependencies of your infrastructure and use that as input to help build your TBSM views. So I kind of think of it this way. If I want to just get into the water and start working on this notion of a dashboard without having to do a massive investment, building some introductory dashboards using the Tivoli Enterprise Portal is a good way to go. If I get to a certain point to where I'm going to need to grow this, add more complexity, more pieces, or just figuring out the underlying infrastructure takes a lot of time, now you're probably looking at perhaps the investment in the TBSM and the TATM architecture and those things. So let's go to the next slide that says summary. And this is where we're just kind of wrapping things up. The Tivoli Enterprise Portal provides a powerful, flexible, integrated capability. I can manage a lot of common performance and availability data from this single point of control. Just like in the example I showed a couple slides ago, we're able to integrate information from DB2, CICS, COS, network, DASD storage monitoring, all in a single display. Answer that question of what's the most important thing I want to look at on the system for each of the components, put it on a single workspace. You can do that using the Tivoli portal. I think that's one of the things that makes the Tivoli portal powerful. By taking advantage of these mechanisms and taking advantage of things like situations and highlighting and stuff like that, the Tivoli portal enables you to recognize and resolve issues very quickly and efficiently, being able to target the stuff that's most critical and then highlight and alert on those and then drill down for detail. So the portal allows you to target the most common issues and therefore ensure that you are truly getting the most from your system Z hardware and software investment. And then I guess the last thing is, again, I just want to mention this whole notion of building the dashboard. I always like to build a dashboard. Whenever I'm working with a new customer and we're rolling out the Tivoli Enterprise Portal for the first time, we'll get up the workspaces, we'll get things started, but then I always like to take something and customize and craft it and build some type of an initial dashboard as a starting point. And then that gives the user a launching point from where they can go ahead and take it and drive it from there. And so it's a mechanism that's there. It's part of the portal. Take advantage of it. Understand the strengths, but also understand its limitations as well. Once you get to a certain point, you probably will want to grow it into more of a TBSM type of approach. But as a good launching point to get in this notion of a management dashboard, the Tivoli Enterprise Portal gives you some great capabilities in that area. And so with that, that's all I have to talk about today. I want to thank you for your time and your attention, and I will turn it back over to the moderator. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ed. Now we'd like to ask that you participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a Q&A session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key, followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's conference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. Or if it was low, press star 3. Question 2. Was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference at the right level, press star 1, not technical enough, press star 2, or if it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Question 3. Are you currently using the Omega Mon with the Tivoli Enterprise Portal? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. Question 4. Which usage scenarios are critical to your environment? If it's the end-to-end cross-system views, press star 1. If it's the capability of managing system alerts, press star 2. If it's the ability of web browser access, press star 3. Or if it's all of the above, press star 4. And for our final question today, we hope you'd enjoyed the teleconference. Please let us know if you're interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If not desired at this time, press star 2. We thank you all for your responses. At this time, we would like to take your questions. If you do have a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone telephone at this time. Once again, for any questions, that is star 1. And at this time, I'll turn things back over to Ed while we wait for questions.
Super. Thank you very much. Again, I want to thank everyone for taking the time to attend today's webcast. If you have questions, don't be bashful. Please feel free to go ahead and you know, just ask me whatever questions you have. You know, I always put together, I try to put together presentations I think show different aspects of how you can leverage the tool. I like to do more than just take the tool out of the box, but kind of take it and tweak it and optimize it. And that was kind of the idea of what I had in mind behind this thing is, you know, starting from the point of what's the most common things I like to look at, but then in turn, you know, how can I kind of tweak it and, you know, and customize to the specific environment? Because one thing I find, and I've worked in many different shops over the years, different types of business, government, commercial, retail, you name it, everybody has a unique environment in a certain way. Do we have any questions?
Yes, we'll take our first question from James Belva with IBM.
Hi, Ed. Hi. Thank you very much. Excellent job.
Thank you.
When you were referring to the terminology of dashboard and workspace, mm-hmm. are they one and the same?
Well, a dashboard is just kind of more really my term. A workspace is technically the term for the physical screen that you see rendered on the display. So any of the screens that you see when you're going through the portal, whether it's the product providers or the ones I've customized, mm-hmm. are technically workspaces. Now, a dashboard is a term that I'll use wherein basically I'm pulling together information from a variety of sources, maybe doing graphics and alerting and things like that.
Right, right. Now, I got interrupted there, I think, at the beginning when you were talking about the custom workspaces.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as being able to do that, you know, that would really be advantageous to us and
mm-hmm.
is how to do that available in the help panels or is
that's a good place to start. Actually, I'll tell you, when I first started working with this technology, you know, 10 plus years ago, the first thing I did was I went into the portal and then I went to the help tutorial and just walked myself through the help tutorial, and that got me started on a lot of the basics of workspaces, queries, screens, situations, and all that stuff. And I think that's a good place to start. And then there are some good, examples and documentation as well. But I find the help to be a pretty good starting point. And the other thing is that, you know, I just recommend sitting down and just not being afraid to experiment with it. Create something, you know, just the premise is leave the product provided stuff alone. And if you're going to do a lot of customization, you know, make that with your own stuff. And then you can save it in the portal for later reference. And if you like it, great. And if you don't like it, just get rid of it and move on.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Debbie Cusco with MGIC.
Hello.
Hi, Ed. This is Betsy. We spoke yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Omnibus, is that included in the TEP?
No. Omnibus is a separate component. Omnibus is, in essence, the backbone, if you will, for things like, have you ever heard of NetCool, network management, but it's also event correlation, and it's in essence the event management backbone for a potential wide variety of IBM solutions, of which Omegamon can plug into that. So, for example, you might have a network component monitoring that feeds into Omnibus. You might have middleware components, or in the case here, we have Omegamon monitoring coming from Z that can either drive alerts that would just take the form of messages on a console or red lights on the TEP, or you could also use that EIF interface, that event interface, and broker that event over to the Omnibus. But, I don't know in your particular shop if you have Omnibus or not, but it's a common tool that's used in a wide variety of shops, but its primary focus originally was network management, network alerts, but it's actually grown because it's a very good event correlation engine. So when you have a lot of alerts you need to correlate and sift through real events versus bogus events, that's a good tool to use.
We don't have it. I noticed I'm also installing AF Operator at this time, and
mm-hmm.
I noticed it can receive alerts from the Omegamons.
Yes.
Would that be a way that I can grab the alert, send the alert over to AF Operator and then issue the page?
That would be an ideal way to use it. A lot of people will use paging mechanisms driven by automation. You know, so in other words, what you can do is you can have a situation that in turn drives a message. That a message, say, for example, just keep it simple, could appear on the console, and then your automation engine can then take it and track it. And usually most automation products, you know, whatever you're looking at, also come with some type of a mechanism or a command you can use to drive emails, pages, whatever. And so that's a very simple, clean way to do it.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, for questions, that is star one.
So don't be bashful. If you have questions, feel free to ask. Again, I appreciate you guys taking the time to attend the presentation. It's always fun to just discuss different ideas and things.
We'll hear next from Doug Lewis with IBM.
Yes. Do you know how to or where a good source of information is for getting the portal server to talk to the TEMS for those who don't have a particularly strong background in network and TCP/IP?
Okay. So just in terms of how to configure it, is that what you're asking?
Well, I've got a portal server and I've got a TEMS, and I'd like them to talk to each other.
Yeah.
Or not.
That would be beneficial. Otherwise, you're not going to get a lot of fun out of it. I mean, the configuration guide does go through, you know, a lot of the options in terms of the setup and stuff, but I grant you it may not necessarily, because it's referenced, it may not be the most readable thing in terms of a tutorial. Probably the best place to go, I believe there's an IBM Tivoli Monitoring ITM Red Book that might go through it and explain it a little bit better. I don't have a title or manual number for that, but if you email me, I'll try to dig out a good example. A lot of times I like red books because they kind of read more as a practicum, whereas, frankly, a lot of times just the core documentation is reference on what's this parameter, what's that parameter, but it doesn't take you cookbook style through, which is, I think, more what you're asking for.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, so if you want to email me on that, my email is woodse, W-O-O-D-S-E, @us.ibm.com. Also, well, you're IBM, so I'm in Blue Pages. So feel free, drop me a line. I'll be happy to help you out however I can.
Moving on to Joe Wagner.
Yes, hi, Ed. How do you get Omnibus? Is that an IBM product?
Yes, Omnibus is an IBM product. And Omnibus is basically it's network management as well as other component type management and a wide variety of IBM Tivoli monitoring and management solutions all plug and play into this Omnibus infrastructure. And so whoever your Tivoli representative is at your location, if you ask them about Omnibus and want to get more information on Omnibus, I'm quite confident they will drop everything they're doing to come over and talk to you about it.
Okay, thanks, Ed.
Sure.
And we appear to have no further questions. Mr. Woods, I'll turn the conference back to you for concluding remarks.
Okay, great. Well, again, thank you very much. Really enjoy putting the material together. It's great talking to you guys again. We'll continue to do more of these presentations in the future. Also, feel free to stop by my blog, tivoliwithaz.blogspot.com. That's my own musings on Tivoli on System Z. And with that, I want to thank you guys and have a great day. Thank you.
That concludes this IBM teleconference. Thank you all for joining us.